Welcome to Mental Healthy, where we share the stories and expertise of professionals working diligently in the field of mental health. I'm your host today, Dr. Kenyon Knapp. Well, welcome everyone to the Mental Healthy Podcast. We're glad to have you with us today. I've got a great special guest, Dr. Daria White. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Counselor Education and Family Studies here at Liberty University. So welcome to the program, Dr. White.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Knapp, for having me.
Oh, yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming on and sharing. But before we dive into the topic today, you wrote a book. Let's talk a little bit about you and your background and where you've grown up and things like that. So why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Okay. So I've lived in the States for a while now, married to an American who was a missionary in Bulgaria. We met there. We corresponded. But I am from Eastern Europe. I'm from Bulgaria originally. It's a part of the Balkan Peninsula, if you don't know where that's at. I come from a small town in the mountains. And as it happens, I'm from the first Protestant church in the country. Back in the 1850s is when the first missionaries came. There were missionaries from the Congregational and Methodist Church. And the Congregational Church had the first one there, and like the first gathering. And that's my great grandfather that started that, that was part of that. So I have a background in that, but I grew up communist. For some of you, maybe the younger generation won't know very much about that, but I was 16 when communism collapsed in Eastern Europe, for the most part, very peacefully. And this is when I personally became a Christian, converted, entered the church with a small group of young people when most of the churches were empty and it was just older people there. And then went and studied theology and came and studied here in the States counseling. And that's kind of like a very short version of my story. But it's been kind of a long journey to get here and to be a counselor educator at this point. But the background's always been, you know, rooted in Bulgarian Protestantism and kind of survival of faith during very difficult times for people there.
Yeah, well, it certainly sounds like it. Let me ask, you mentioned you became a Christian at the time that communism fell in your country, Bulgaria.
Yes.
Was that just a coincidence that you became a Christian at that time, or was there something connected to your faith journey and the fall of communism there?
That's a great question. So what was happening, I think, before communism collapsed, I think things were starting to get a little bit easier for Christians. There was a better chance for people to actually worship together. And I was invited to one of these small youth gatherings up in the mountains. I went there. I didn't know very much. My grandmother was the one that told me the Jesus stories. I couldn't go to church after I was like in second, third grade. That was prohibited. There was people informing, you know, on Christians. My parents were not Christian at the time either. So this kind of awakening started during that time. But then after that collapse, the spring after was the first free Easter. And I remember very vividly, because none of us had set foot in church. And my first going was that Easter to the Orthodox church in town. Everybody was there. It was just crammed full of people. I think there was hundreds of people inside. And there was this first feeling of, there's God. And he's here. And there's this, you know, awareness of, what do I do with that? And I just can tell you, this is just a huge, momentous feeling, and I was not the only one. There were thousands of people in the country that became Christians. So if you're talking about revivals, I was a part of a revival movement that happened in the country because people were so hungry, especially young people, during that period of time for something spiritual that a lot of us entered the churches. And then I was one of the first, basically the first generation that went and studied theology, again, with American missionaries that started that in Sofia, Bulgaria, because there were no pastors. There was just such a vacuum that communism created for the 44 years that it was there. So yeah, it was a transformational moment, you know, for many of us and for me personally.
Yeah, well, that's a neat story. I know the listeners love to hear the background of people, and you've got a neat story where you grew up that certainly different from a lot of American folks. But our podcast today, though, is about your book that you published recently. Can you tell the listeners what the book is about, the content, the goals, and just, I guess, generally what the book is about?
Okay, so this book is in the works for the last 10 years. It was not meant to start as a book. It was something that I thought of, well, it's actually more than 10 years ago, in 2009, 2010. And it started, like many of you who are in graduate school, with the graduate class. And the graduate class was really strange. The name of it, it was called Research is Art and Transformation. And he was teaching the skills of doing research, graduate type research, but also the reason why you want to do that. And my teacher at the time was Dr. Howard Zaire. He's the grandfather of restorative justice in the world. As I listened to that, I just went through that class. I was just thinking about my country. Bulgaria hasn't been communist for over 30 years now. But what's interesting is, like, why are we struggling so much? Why is the Eastern Bloc still not doing well? Why is there such a massive sense of pessimism and there's no values? People, I mean, in the first years, there was just a sense of faith and returning to the old values. But then that evaporated very quickly. And democracy is not like what you understand in the West. So I was starting to search for stories, and I think that's what that class was about. It was about, and you probably, all of you know that phrase, stories are data with a soul, right, by Green Brown. So I was thinking, what are the stories that we can tell ourselves that are different from the stories we tell as a country? And a very interesting population occurred for me, and that was the population of grandmothers. And we call them babas in the country. They're very revered. We love listening to their stories. A lot of us actually grew up with them because under communism, our mothers and fathers were back at work. Feminism, I think, in many ways came faster for us than it came here. And so my grandmothers were very important to me. By that time, both had died. And I was just starting to think about all kinds of theories as well. McIntyre theory, of virtue theory. It's the whole idea that in pre-modern society, human life was set up in a community, that faith mattered, that the land mattered, that the connection with other people mattered. And in 2010 is when I went back. It's been a while now. I went back and I collected all these stories. And then I learned how to do photography. I did an exhibit. And that toured, well, it was in several places here in the States. It was at the Bulgarian Embassy, Eastern Mennonite University, James Madison University. And then in Bulgaria, it was in my hometown. And just massively well-received. But the idea was, okay, so we have lived through trauma. I guess that was the kind of my theory, right? We've lived through trauma. Communism was a trauma, and it was a long trauma. And it was a state in which people could not trust in each other. You couldn't tell your neighbor what's going on with you because you didn't know if they were reporting on you. And I thought, okay, who's lived through that and how did they get through it? And in the grandmothers, and that was my assumption, there's wisdom. So let's collect it and let's see what they have to say about it. And the idea of post-traumatic growth, the idea that, okay, trauma does happen, but also simultaneously there's post-traumatic growth that happens. Let's go see what the trauma was for all these women and how did they work through that. So the stories were collected. This was in Pirin, Macedonia. That's a region of Bulgaria. When you think about the geographical region of Macedonia, it's now in northern Macedonia, the country. It's where I grew up, Pirin, Macedonia. That's like in the that mountain range, and then it's in Vardar, Macedonia, that's in Greece right now. So I went around the villages, my hometown, and I got 20 different stories. I transcribed them all the way I was taught in grad school, right? And then in 2018, somebody said to me, why don't you write a book, finally, on that? A lot of the women have died already. And in a way, I think that kind of freed me to share some of the stories, because they're pretty painful when they're fully told. Mm-hmm. And so I did, and in the telling, I had to tell some of my story, which I have a transgenerational story. My grandfather was tortured by the communists when they came, and then just systemically, just the job was taken away from him. I had to work in the mine for many years, paralyzed, age 50, and his brother in 1944 was killed, and his whole family, the house was taken away from them. They'll move out of town. No, they didn't stay in touch. So a lot of traumatic stuff. And then just looking at this whole picture, I know this kind of long answer, but it's like, okay, how do I forgive? I personally, how do I forgive as a Christian to people that we actually know, some of these people that participated in the killings, in the taking of the land, taking of homes, and where's God's redemption in all this? Like, is there like a God redemptive arc over what happened to us, and how do we move on? I as a person, and we as a town, and we as a country.
Wow. So you have relatives that were murdered by the communists, and relatives that were persecuted, and you mentioned your grandfather. I read his story, how he was basically crippled by all the abuse he endured. And so I can totally see how this relates to the mental health field, and how having opportunities taken away from you, and the injustice that people experience, it could probably depress people.
Yeah.
What would you say are the mental health implications of what all these people went through?
Well, honestly, I've been thinking, when you think about attachment theory, right? And attachment theory answers two questions. And it's, am I lovable and worthy? And is the world a safe place? And if you look at that through the trauma of that generation and what they experienced, it will be both no, And what I'm seeing in the country, so here we are, three generations later, we either have very passive people that just won't speak up for themselves, will not ask for their own rights, or we have people that are very self-entitled, so you have the dismissive attachment, evidence in their actions of nothing's wrong with me, what's wrong with this country, what's wrong with everybody else. So it feels like we have not attached well. And so this transgenerational trauma, and we now know, like, I feel like in the last 10 years, a lot of this kind of stuff started coming up. Whatever happened to your grandparents, it's carried in the genes, and it's carried in the stories, and it's carried in the behaviors. And so it takes a lot of effort. I mean, because for the most part, you're like, well, what's wrong with me? Why am I depressed? Or why am I so anxious? Or why am I so angry? And some of the answers might not be in your immediate present tense. It might be hidden, two generations back. Because here's the difference between Bulgaria and Germany, for example. Germany, communism collapsed. A year later, the files, the dossiers were all open. And whoever was part of this reporting system, whoever was in charge with the Communist Party, was no longer allowed to be in power. That is not the case in Bulgaria. The files were opened 23 years later. And during that time, a lot of that information was destroyed. And we all know a lot of the people now in power are connected to the same people that were in power before. So we have a lot of very complicated things going on. And I mean, we have a brain drain 2 million people. I think it's 2 million people left the country since the fall of communism. And we shrunk from 9 million to, I think we're something over 6 million now as a population.
Wow. So you've got the brain drain and then the corruption you mentioned.
Yes.
And
a lot of
all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of corruption.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And of course, all these things, you know, lead to probably a sense of hopelessness and depression.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
anxiety and things like that.
Yeah.
You mentioned the book has been pretty well received so far.
Yeah.
Is it just in the Bulgarian language, or do you have it in the Turkish, Romani, or English languages?
Well, that's a good question. And unfortunately, for right now, it's only in Bulgarian. But there's been a lot of people saying, okay, when is it going to be in English? The one reason that it will be so good being English, there's a lot of Bulgarians here in the States. There's this old Bulgarian immigration that came after the Turkish occupation of Bulgaria. The Macedonian area was just trying to get free. So a lot of Bulgarian / Macedonians that came first. But then after the fall of communism, many, many came. In a place like Chicago, and there's no official numbers, they're talking about something like 200,000 that are here. Just in Chicago. That's, I think, the place that has the most Bulgarians. but there will be many of them that don't speak the language anymore, but still have Bulgarian identity. And that will connect to the Bulgarian diaspora. And I feel like stories like that in America are now of interest of other people, of other places. Of how people handle trauma. And because this is really not, I mean, it's my journey. The reason why I did it is my journey so that people will be interested in reading the grandmother stories, these elderly women stories. But there's just tons of wisdom there. So we'll see. No, not in any language but Bulgarian for now. Yeah, we'll try to make some connections. And see who's willing to get it translated, because it's difficult. It's some of it is in dialect, and there's some old words that I would have no idea how to translate into English for myself. I'll need help.
Oh, that's okay. it's great that you have it in the Bulgarian language at least, and you're giving a voice to all these ladies who've been through a lot of difficult life experiences.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's funny. I think in America and probably most of the world right now, there's probably more awareness of that part of the world, like around Bulgaria, because of the war in Ukraine with Russia.
Yeah.
And the Russian mm-hmm. the Russian invasion.
Yeah.
So I guess let me ask you, what's the current situation in Bulgaria? Like, you know, after the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and are you involved in any way at this point?
Right. Okay, so what's interesting about the reaction of Bulgaria, I think many of us have the assumption that if Russia is the invader, we all know whose side we're on. And that's not the case. And that was really shocking that many Bulgarians have this nostalgic view of the Russian past in Bulgaria, and all kinds of conspiracy theories sprung up. So we're not necessarily united, even though I think that it is a minority that would be siding with Russia right now and not with Ukraine. I think economically things have gotten worse. I think economically things have gotten worse for the world and Europe, but it's harder for Eastern European countries, especially ones that are up closer.
Yeah, so I know Russia said that that there was a lot of Nazis and people like that in sections of Ukraine, and they were freeing the Ukrainians from the Nazis.
Yes, exactly. I guess
those stories part of what the Bulgarians or some Bulgarians believe?
I think so. I think so. So yeah, I don't know what they're being freed from. I don't think Ukrainians want to be freed. They just want to be left alone. And I think what's been amazing is the courage of Ukraine. I don't think anybody expected that. I think we expected that war to be over and for Putin to be marching into Kiev, you know, within a week or two. And he didn't. How this winter is going to be, that nobody knows. It's probably going to be a very hard winter for a lot of people, especially for Ukraine. As far as involvement, it's just I wanted to do EMDR. I couldn't this summer. I was there. The need is there. The need to do immediate kind of after the crisis intervention is there. There's a lot of Ukrainians. I'm just now trying to think of the number. Maybe like 500,000. I think that's the number. The biggest number is now in Poland, I think. What's interesting, what I've been more involved with is stabilizing relationships between Macedonia and Bulgaria. A lot of that, I think there's like a trickle down. What we must understand is that nothing happens in vacuum. And so this, what's happening with Russia is affecting other relations in the, like in the Balkan Peninsula. And of course, it will be for Russian interest to destabilize the whole area. And I think in many ways, they did that by all these refugees that are now coming. That's like the biggest crisis since World War II that we're seeing in Europe. So yeah, I've been involved with that. I'm the vice president of Bulgarian Studies Association here. And so we had a Library of Congress conference that was in June, July this year. And there was a provocation like from a Macedonian, very radical person. That's too long a story. You got just people involved at all levels to just get this kind of stable before it exploded. Because at that point, Bulgarian Macedonian relations were at their worst. So what I'm saying, we all have a part to play. And that's the thing. I mean, we as counselors know that, like the whole idea of advocacy, which just feels in some ways foreign to counselors, I think, because counselors are used to the one-on-one approach and working at the level of one human, one change, you know, one family change and all that. But sometimes we get called into, like, just stepping up into systems. And I think counselors would be good at that because they are good at reading people. They're good at bringing peace, good at understanding, conflict resolution, all of that. So in some ways, that's been my part, although I wish, like, as far as Ukraine goes and the refugee crisis, and that's going to continue, I'm hoping to do more work when I'm back in Bulgaria in February, maybe, to meet with some people and just do something, like, for whoever's there. In my hometown, there's a lot of refugees as well. So it's really strange. Like, just there's Ukrainians speaking Russian everywhere. Things changed. Things have really changed.
Wow, that is wild. I guess we don't always realize how it's impacting all these other countries as much as it is. But that's great to hear that insight. You know, earlier on in the program, you mentioned that. You operate from a post-traumatic growth perspective, or you've heard a lot of that from the ladies you interviewed, and you talked about attachment theory, and you talked about their faith as well. Let me ask you, with the interviews you did with these grandmothers, what did you find in regards to how their faith affected their ability to cope, or maybe what degree of maybe post-traumatic growth perspective these ladies had? What did you find with that?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And so that's the thing about the grandmothers. These are mostly were women tending fields, living in their villages, never traveled. Some of them couldn't even read. But there's this foundational, very concrete way of knowing God and of relating to the world. And so I heard that over and over, this feeling of you can't change what's happening, which they couldn't. You forgive and you move on. You give to others different from you because it's good for your soul to give. You speak to God about everything and he answers. You have faith no matter what. I don't know. I mean, I feel in some ways our life has become a lot more complicated. The way we just analyze and go through everything. But these are people that basically had everything happen to them, right? Death of children, world war, taking of property, name changes of the Muslim population. And in the same time, you see, and I don't know, maybe that's also what happens with age. There's a sense of grace. And I tell you, I think that's what it is. I think the sense that God is a just judge and that one day everybody will be judged according to their deeds was very deep in that psyche of it doesn't matter how unjust the world is, and it doesn't matter what's happened to me, because one day God sees and he will judge accordingly. And so that relieves them from having to do that themselves, from holding on to that. It gave them freedom not to be victims, because a lot of them did not sound like victims.
Yeah, I guess if you believe in ultimate justice from God, it gives you hope that you're not just being treated poorly and there's never going to be, you know, a consequence for the abuse.
Yes, and I feel like this kind of eschatological feeling, we've lost some of that. You know, Advent, this is the beginning of Advent. Yesterday it started. And the idea of Advent was not so much looking toward Christmas, it was the idea of looking toward Christ returning. And I feel that at some very foundational level, these communities, Orthodox Protestant community especially, they had that and they believed that, and it's just kind of part of the fabric of life, that there is God and he sees and he knows, and he will come and he will do what's right. And what you've done in this life, if it was evil, it's going to be repaid.
Yeah, that all makes sense. Let me ask you this, though. You mentioned when you were 16 years old, that's when communism fell. What was it like back, like you're mentioning now people have a sense of that there is going to be justice, but in the past it didn't seem like there was justice. What did communism do in the culture back then, like in Bulgaria?
What did communism do to the culture?
Yeah. Before communism fell, like what was it like in the culture, and what were the mental health implications of that for people?
Well, it's really interesting. It's almost like I, as a child, right? So my grandfather was the one tortured. I heard that story. Yet I believed in communism bringing good to all the nations, and capitalism being the worst evil on the planet. And there's no such thing as democracy in the Western world. My generation, I think, for the most part, was just brainwashed. You know, Marxism is a real thing. It's a religion of its own. It demands worship. And part of me, I don't know if I should say this here and now, but neo-Marxist movements, they're everywhere and they're here. And people, especially young people, don't understand what they're talking about, because at the end of the day, Marxism will take its toll and it's going to take its victims and it's going to do the same thing, because the idea, the root of it is that, and there's no way you can make it better, because simple people cannot be in charge of other people, take over everything, and somehow go for the kingdom of God. The kingdom of God is only possible in Christ. So if Christ is at the center, then it works. If there's no Christ at the center, if you take God out of the picture, then you look at what happened in the Eastern Bloc and the millions of people that that paid that price there.
Wow, goodness.
But I believe that. I totally believed it until 16, until the whole thing, like House of Cards, collapsed. It was like that was my world. Mm-hmm.
Well, they controlled all the media where you lived, right? I mean, you weren't hearing other messages or other
ideas. Oh, my goodness,
other ideas.
No. There were no other messages, you know. There was program one and program two.
Yeah, of course, here in America, we like to think there's a marketplace of ideas and you can share all these different ideas and then, you know, people will arrive at truth, hopefully. But I guess over there, there was no marketplace of ideas.
No, there was no such thing. There was only one right way.
Wow, goodness. Well, I can see how that would be difficult and challenging. Well, this book, I tell you, as I was getting ready for this interview, I know you have a website as well on Weebly.com. Would you be okay with sharing the address of that for the listeners if they wanted to see parts of the story of your book?
Yeah, that's totally fine. Although this is really, truly an old website. It hasn't been updated. You know, I went for a PhD. I'm doing counseling now. I don't have the time. But it's dariawhite.weebly.com.
Okay. And that's Daria, D-A-R-I-A, and then white at weebly.com. Okay. And you're right. A little disclaimer there. This site hasn't been updated recently. And if they what's the title of your book, by the way, in Bulgarian?
Oh, it's called Manda, and Manda is Magdalena, you know, the short for Magdalena in my hometown, and that's the name of my great-grandmother, the one that left the country. And I named it after her because she left the country with her oldest son, came to Canada, and she left the younger two boys back in Bulgaria. So in some ways, I feel like for Americans, for you, you have the stories of the ones that arrived. I have the stories of the ones that were left behind, kind of, you know.
Wow. Well, I'll look forward to following this and hopefully at some point being able to read it in the language I can read.
Right.
But
I hope so.
But until then, no, I'm grateful, though, that you have it in the language of your people, though. And
yeah.
And I'm sure this will bring some satisfaction and hopefully some healing for the people who are able to tell their stories.
Well, I think that's really the point, yes. And a lot of crying has happened. People are like, I'm crying. I can't put it down.
Well, it makes sense, from the stories that I did read about it. Well, let me ask you this too. What other writing projects are you working on currently?
Right. Well, we just finished one article for APA, and it's, I think, revision of spirituality. I hope I'm not wrong. But it's a scoping review for spiritual integration with PTSD interventions. And I did that with several people. One of them is Dr. Jamon Davis. And he was, Everett Worthington is the one that asked us for this. So that was really exciting. But as a result of working on that, I started thinking about the monastic movement in the Orthodox Church, like the Eastern Church, and spiritual interventions that counselors here will not be aware of. What I've noticed, there's a lot of Eastern influence on counselors, and this is what the review showed. There is tons of stuff on mantra and yoga, hardly anything with Christian emphasis. And I thought, well, if people are interested in Eastern practices, here's the Orthodox Church, let's see what it has to offer. In February, I might be going back to one of the monasteries. It's a female monastery in Greece. I was invited to go there, stay with the nuns there, and maybe wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and do some of these prayers and just learn about, you know, how do you listen to God? How is that done the Christian way? And if there's something that we can offer to the mental health field here from a Christian perspective.
Yeah, well, there's certainly a lot to be learned for people on how to do spiritual formation, like you're describing there, and practicing the presence of God and other disciplines that Christians can learn to help them really apply their faith and apply it to their daily lives. So that's really neat.
Yes. Well, I hope Christians can look for Christian answers, you know, like that there are Christian answers that could be satisfying just the same as, you know, yoga and mindfulness have been.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you, here in the final minutes of the interview, I always try to ask people, is there something you wanted to share today that I didn't ask about yet? Because I know for me, I get done with these interviews and I think, oh, I should have said this or that. So what's the final word you might want to share with the listening audience about either Bulgaria or your book or something else we talked about today?
Wow, that's a good question. And I'm not sure. I think searching for truth takes a long time. And a lot of times from our own personal stories, God can bring a lot more in that you wouldn't have seen maybe 20, 30 years ago. And I know that's the truth with students. I try to interact like at a deeper level with students, and I notice a lot of them bring their own trauma. That's a big reason why they started in the field. They went to counseling, they realized, oh, wow, that's been very helpful. They found God in a crucial moment in time. And then out of that, like, it seems like God is very good with pain and suffering. He doesn't waste it. And if you're willing to sit with it, there's a lot of good that comes out of evil. And, I mean, when you look at the Bible, it's just story after story that's it says that. So I feel like that's what the book is about. I feel like that's what my life has kind of been about. And in many ways, that's what Christian counselors are about. And I try to encourage that in people and say, okay, what is your pain? And how does that help you speak to others? There's a saying, you cannot bring people to a place you haven't been yourself. And that's how it works.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. I know a lot of the listeners can relate to that, that they've probably gone on their own journeys in their lives from, you know, difficulties they've experienced and then how that impacted their faith and how they found meaning and purpose in life through their suffering. So thank you so much for your time today and for the interview. And once again, listeners, this is Dr. Daria White, and her book is about her grandmother's great-grandmother's name is the title of the book, and hopefully we'll have this coming to English before too long, and we'll all learn from it. And in the meantime, though, we can certainly appreciate all that we've learned from you today about Bulgarian culture and all the things that those people went through, including your family. So thank you for sharing your story today.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Just a chance to talk about all these things. I know there's a lot of them, but that's just good. And I like the West to know about a little country that most of you probably didn't know much about till today.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in today to the Mental Healthy Podcast. And we'll look forward to having you join us next time. So thank you so much. Bye-bye. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Mental Healthy. Please be sure to subscribe for more episodes and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues. You can find this podcast on all your favorite podcast platforms. We hope you join us next time for more on Mental Healthy.
Music for this podcast is licensed under Creative Commons by Excel Music Publishing at freemusicpublicdomain.com.